All right, Alexander, we have two big news items that happened last week with regards to the UK, where you are located. The first big news item was Boris Johnson grabbing a flight in panic mode, it seems, grabbing a flight to Kiev to bring Zelensky a book about the Queen, from what I understand, and an offer to train Ukraine military, for the UK to train Ukraine military, and to, as Boris said, to win the war. And then you had the other big news, which was connected to Assange, and that is Home Secretary Patel signing the extradition orders to send Assange to Virginia, where he faces, I believe, 17 counts of violating the Espionage Act, something.
That's right.
I think
something
I got that
like
right.
That, yeah.
You also had a statement. Okay, yeah, you also have, real quick, a statement today, which came out of the new Australian Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, who has, he's taken a platform in support of freeing Assange, from what I understand, but he has come out to say there are some people who think that if you put things in capital letters on Twitter and put an exclamation mark, that somehow makes it more important. It doesn't. I intend to lead a government that engages diplomatically and appropriately with our partners. So he hasn't really come out fighting hard for Assange, but he's kind of hinting, take it as you want. He's kind of hinting that he's going to engage diplomatically to find a resolution for Assange, who is, at the end of the day, Alexander, a passport holder, I imagine, of Australia. He's an Australian citizen. So I would say that the Australian government is obligated to help Assange.
Absolutely. Now, can I just say, there was an Australian lawyer for whom I have enormous respect telling me, you know, that it might be that Albanese, as Prime Minister, will try and do what he can for Assange. I was utterly cynical about this. I was very, very sceptical that the Australian Labor Party would really ride to Assange's rescue. I'm afraid I take this comment by Albanese as a clear sign that they're going to do nothing for Assange, because if ever there was a situation which needed a strong tweet with an exclamation mark, the Assange case was that one. So when he says that he's not going to do that, that he's going to engage in quiet diplomacy, that means he's not going to engage in any kind of diplomacy on Assange's behalf at all. So that's what I think about that. That's all I'm going to say about that. Now, let's turn to the other topics. Let's deal first with Boris Johnson going to Kiev. Now, bear in mind, nobody was told about this in advance. This was all done very privately, very secretly. What was supposed to happen instead was that Boris Johnson was supposed to attend a conference of his party, the Conservative Party, which is going to be looking at how to fight two very important parliamentary by-elections, one of which is in a place called Wakefield, which is a working-class constituency, one of the a pro-Brexit working-class constituencies that switched massively to the Tories in 2019 and which gave them their majority. And at a time, of course, when the Conservatives are under very heavy electoral pressure because of the gathering economic crisis. So that was what everybody thought Boris Johnson was going to do, that he was going to come along, address this conference, support the various candidates, give the Conservatives a boost in their battle to try and hold on in these difficult working class seats and at a time when the Conservatives feel under pressure. He went to Kiev instead, and the Conservatives are furious. Now, this is the first time that Boris Johnson has done something in support or purported support for Zelensky and for Ukraine, which has generated criticism in Britain. But it has generated a lot of criticism in Britain. Conservative MPs, even I believe some Conservative MPs who voted for him in the recent confidence vote, have come out and criticised what he has just done. The reason, of course, they have is because they're all aware of the fact that the situation in Britain is staggering from one crisis to the next. We now have talk about strikes, not just in the railways, but in all sorts of other sectors. I was reading in the London Times just before we did this programme that barristers, lawyers, are now thinking of going on strike as well, because, you see, we have this enormous cost of living crisis. And I think for the first time, it's really cut through to people in Britain, including to people within Boris Johnson's own party, that this focus on Ukraine is completely misconceived. We've got more important and pressing things to worry about closer to home, and the Prime Minister going off to Kiev and meeting Zelensky might be good for the cameras, but it's not helping anyone in Britain, and it's increasingly looking like Boris is the Prime Minister of Ukraine rather than the Prime Minister of Britain, and that he cares more about the Ukrainians than he does about the British. So I think actually it was a turning point. I don't mean that it's going to stop the British government from supporting Ukraine, but I think after this particular debacle, they might be a bit more careful about how they go about doing it in future, because it didn't go down well at all. I think the extent of the criticism of Johnson for this move has not been picked up properly in the international media. But if you follow the British media, you will pick up some of it. If you are close to what's going and being said within the British political class, you will know how angry some people are.
Okay, before you get to Assange, I have to ask you one question. Why did Boris go to Kiev? I've been thinking about this a lot, actually. And I come to the conclusions that perhaps he wanted to distract away from his failings in the UK. He did it out of panic, perhaps, after the meeting between Macron and Scholz and Draghi with Zelensky, and he went there to give Zelensky different orders. Maybe the military-industrial complex and the neocons ordered him to go, all these different things. But the more I'm thinking about it, I'm going to throw it at you. Maybe he left to go to Kiev because he was just too chicken to actually sit in the UK and deal with this meeting and with the problems that he has. He's just ran away, it seems. I mean, he's a coward, in other words. Is that a possibility as well? Could it be all of these things? Why do you think he ran to Kiev in such a hurry?
Right, well, can I just say, in private, people are saying exactly that he didn't want to go and meet the activists, the Conservative Party activists, because he didn't want to hear the criticisms that they might level at him. And so rather than do that, he ran off to Kiev, where he knew he'd get all kinds of nice photo ops. Now, of course, he's saying that this trip to Kiev had been prepared long ago, and you know this was already planned. I don't think anybody takes that seriously. If he really had been planned, then why would he have had another date to go to this conference instead? So, I mean, I don't think anybody takes that seriously. I think the probably most common view is your last one, that in fact he didn't want to stay around because he didn't want to face criticism from his own activists. Having said that, and I really make this point, you know, because that might be the primary reason, it doesn't mean that the other reasons that you outlined aren't, you know, real ones also. I think he was worried that after Scholz, Macron and Draghi went to Kiev, they might indeed push Zelensky into negotiations. And for Johnson, that would be extremely difficult because, of course, he was the man who dissuaded Zelensky from the negotiations back in March. And if negotiations resume with Ukraine in a weaker position than it was in March, but Johnson is going to come under criticism. He'd come under criticism in Britain too. So he has to stop that. Or at least so he thinks. And of course, he does now have to take orders from the neocons and from the MIC, because disastrously, right at the beginning of this crisis, and even before to a great extent, he went into bed with them. He's now tied at the hip with them. So he can't just disregard what they want to say. So I think your other points are actually valid too. I think principally he didn't want to face, you know, the criticism and abuse of his own activists, the bedrock of his party, the people who made him Prime Minister and Conservative Party leader and who stuck with him through the Brexit war. He doesn't want to have exposed the extent to which he's lost their respect and lost their support. But at the same time, he clearly doesn't want Zelensky to negotiate peace with Russia, and he doesn't want to annoy the MIC. And of course, Boris being Boris, he always loves the opportunity to play Churchill, to pretend that he's some great mover and shaker on the international scene who comes along and stands firm when the Europeans are wobbling.
All right. Any further comments on Assange?
Yes, much to say here. I mean, this thing was announced on Friday. In other words, just before the weekend was coming. It was done in a hole-in-the-corner fashion. It should have been done at least 2 weeks earlier. The government exceeded its own time limits. They were looking for an opportunity to just get this out quietly without attracting too much attention. I think my own sense is that opinion in Britain, with the deterioration of the economic situation in Britain, that opinion in Britain amongst British people has started to harden behind Assange, that it's beginning to catch more attention. I was seriously worried that when they announced that on Friday, they'd hurriedly put him on a plane to the US over the weekend. That didn't happen. Who knows why? Perhaps there was too much criticism. Perhaps Assange's lawyers threatened a court order to prevent it. There'd just been a court order from the European Court of Human Rights to stop deportations of people, immigrants to Rwanda, refugees to Rwanda. That's a whole big topic, which we can discuss another time. But I think they didn't want another embarrassing legal defeat like that over the weekend. So that now opens the way for Assange to bring an appeal, which he will do this week. And we're going to have another massive legal battle. And I don't have much hope of it. I mean, very little hope of it. But it will give Assange and his legal team an opportunity to re-argue before the High Court all those points about the essential illegality of the decision to deport Assange to the United States that were argued before in the Westminster Magistrates Court, but which the District Judge Baritza backed the United States over. So we could have a protracted legal battle lasting perhaps a year before this is finally decided. And it'll be done in the High Court before High Court judges. I gather there'll be at least two, perhaps three. We'll see how long it takes.
Okay, we will leave it there. TheDuran.locals.com, everybody, and go to the Duran shop. Use the code GOODDAY, get 10% off all merchandise. Take care.